quarter. Thank you, folks, for getting out of your regular routine and meeting us on Wednesday morning. It's about 8 minutes after 8. We have Representative Hayes and Fate, Stevens, Crawford, and Wilson, and Chair Colgill. Today, we're going to do two bills. We'll do House Bill 531, which is a companion to a Senate bill dealing with election communications and the reporting issues. Then we're going to bring up the Veterans Memorial Endowment Fund bill. That's House Bill 371. There's a specific amendment going to be offered by Representative James, who we're waiting for. But while we're waiting, we'll go ahead and do 531. Once again, 531 is in the Senate, and we have Joe Bailash with us here today, who is staff from the State Affairs Committee, and they heard it in State Affairs. Joe, where's the bill at?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Joe Bailash, staff to Senate State Affairs Committee, Chairman Coghill, members of the committee. The Senate Bill 371, is currently on the floor calendar. It was in second reading yesterday on the Senate floor. We'll be in third reading today. Just a brief history, the bill was introduced as an attempt to try and get some disclosure on issue ads. And there's this huge gray area out there in election law between an express ad that supports or opposes a candidate and then somebody who's purely talking about their issue and what they're trying to advocate to the public in the context of the campaign season. Between the two is a wide area of grayness that, you know, candidates' names and images get mentioned all the time, and it certainly appeared like if we could just get some disclosure on these issue ads, perhaps we can, shed a little more light on what's going on out in the public. However, as we looked into things, simply requiring disclosure on a purely issue-based ad provided some constitutional problems. And so we had to rethink things and address them in the State Affairs Committee, and that's what brought us around to the point we're looking at here today. The bill is before you is based in large part on the McCain-Feingold or Shays-Meehan bill, which Congress passed recently and the President signed into law. And McCain-Feingold basically says if you identify a candidate 30 days before a primary or 60 days before a general election, it's out. You can't run that ad unless you are a candidate or a party, a group. And so that's where we kind of started looking to see how they dealt with the problem. And in discussions with Ledge Legal, came around to to looking at some case law, and it's too early in the morning for me to remember exactly where. It was either the 10th or the 4th Circuit. It was a law that defined a political message as one that unambiguously identifies a candidate, and that's it. And that particular Court of Appeals struck it down because it was thought to infringe on one's ability to speak about issues. And so so what we did was we took it another step further than McCain-Feingold did, and that was it has to be an ad that directly or indirectly identifies a candidate, occurs within that window of time before an election, and it addresses an issue of national, state, or local political concern and attributes a position on that particular issue to the candidate identified. And so that's kind of where we're at. And we defined that type of a communication as an expenditure. That means that corporations and unions are not able to make those kind of communications to the public. You have to be a party, a group, a non-group entity, or the candidate, or an individual is still able to make that type of communication all on their own, independently, not coordinated with any of those other types of entities, and out of their own pocket. One other thing that came up in the testimony in State Affairs was a question about the 15-5 form. This year, the commission, the Public Offices Commission, for the first time, I think, Brooke can correct me if I'm wrong, began levying the civil penalties for contributor statements that either were not filed or were filed late. And so we had heard a little bit about that, and so Senator Terrio asked her the question, and she explained a little bit about the history of the statement and the form, and basically over time, as our campaign finance laws have evolved, the usefulness of the form has really kind of worn itself out as it pertains to candidates with these limits. And so we went ahead and deleted the requirement, repealed it in 15-13-080, deleted it entirely, and then also repealed and reenacted another section of 13-040 to make it purely an expenditure report instead of a contribution and expenditure report. So that's the latest. If I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, and what I did was I took the latest version that was in the Senate and took their language, and so that's what we have here to deal with. And I think we'll have some discussion on amendments, but Representative Hayes, do you have a question?
Robert, go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the chair, God, one of these days,
you'll get it right.
Joe, I'm just, I didn't understand the last part about changing from showing as a contribution to an expenditure. How soon will that information be out to the public? How much full disclosure will be out there if we repeal the 15-5 form so it's just an expenditure? And what do we have currently?
Through the chair, Representative Hayes, if it's a contribution, currently under the law, it has to be $500 in order for this 15-5 to be triggered, and you have to file the form. And Miles will inform us, but a great number of people contribute $499. So that speaks for itself. If it is a contribution to a candidate, each candidate is required to report 30 days before their first election, the primary, all contributions and expenditures. And so the contributions will show up 30 days before the primary, and then I think it's 10 days before, 7 days after, and then that cycle repeats itself for the general.
Through the chair, what was it previously, though? What happens now?
Yeah, we're on 531.
To the chair, Representative Hayes, that's how the mechanism works now for candidates reporting. The 15-5 is required to be filed within 30 days of the contribution. So, for example, if the contribution was made on March 1st, it would have until the 1st of April to file their 15-5 with the commission. And that information would be put out on the commission's database that's on the web and also in the offices. But it would be only those contributions that were at the $500 level. All of the other contributions up to $499.99 would not be required to submit, are not required to submit that particular form.
We do have Brooke Miles on, and Brooke, are you on with us?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Brooke Miles, the Executive Director of the Alaska Public Offices Commission.
Was there anything you want to add to that? And I think Representative Crawford has a question here as soon as you answer.
Well, I can give you a brief history of 15-5 reporting if that would be helpful, Mr. Chairman.
Probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
Okay, I'll be very brief. The 15-5 reporting has been a component of Alaska campaign disclosure law since its inception. I do believe in the research that we've done in networking that it is a unique requirement to the state of Alaska. Originally, contributors were required to file this report when they made a contribution that was more than $250. And as you may recall, in those days, a contributor could give up to $1,000 to a candidate per calendar year. So, and it was required to be filed within 10 days. When the state of Alaska undertook campaign finance reform, one of the components that was changed was the 15-5 reporting, and it was increased to be only the $500 contributors, and the time period for submitting it was within 30 days. And so as Mr. Chairman, as Mr. Balash has indicated, it is true that when one reviews candidate campaign disclosure reports, one will see a number of $499 contributions, which is different probably because they didn't wish to have the burden of filing the contributor report. Last several years, the commission has become aware of concerns on behalf of the candidates that this is an additional burden to their contributor. Also with campaign finance reform came a civil penalty for filing it after the 30-day period. The civil penalty is $50 per day from the date the report was due until it's received. Commission for several years after campaign finance reform had a moratorium on or a hold harmless on any of the reports that were which were submitted late. However, this year the legislature overrode the governor's veto last year on Senate Bill 103, which made an additional change to the 15-5 reporting, saying that a candidate could file the report on behalf of her contributor. So with that, the check and balance component, the audit component of the 15-5 reporting as it relates to candidates became not very workable. In addition, when the commission reviewed this at their last meeting in March, they no longer wished to maintain the moratorium or hold harmless. The composition of the commission has changed, and they were uncomfortable not administering the law as written by the legislature and directed staff to begin after the effective date, which was April 16th, of the change in law to assess the civil penalties on a late 15-5. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add, to the best of my knowledge, I don't believe that we have assessed a civil penalty on a 15-5 unless it was an aggravator in a complaint action or other substantial noncompliance. I hope that's helpful, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and very helpful. And before I had Representative Crawford, Stephen, and Wilson. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just before we get there, for the record, we have Representative James with us here for the last 5 minutes or so.
I talked to former Senator Tim Kelly, that was the person that rewrote the law when they redid campaign finance law, and he said that the 15-5 form going up to $500 was actually an oversight, that they didn't intend to go from, I mean, to delete the lower limit, the $250. Is that how you remember it?
Absolutely not, Mr. Chairman. In fact, it was Senator Kelly's staff who came to a commission meeting while the commission was meeting in Juneau and negotiated with them because he wanted at that time to completely get rid of 15-5 reporting. And at that time they negotiated, well, why don't we expand the time period and the amount so it's only the maximum contributors and only within 30 days rather than 10. And that was a Senate majority issue, and actually staff from Senator Kelly's office came. So we have a different recollection of that.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I have an amendment here this morning that would take it back to the reporting everything from $250 up to the $500 maximum. That would, I think, take us to more disclosure rather than less disclosure. Also on the 15-5 form, there's a part in there that says that a person did not get that money, that it was their money they were contributing. They didn't get it from their employer or their parents or somebody else. If we do away with the 15-5 form, there wouldn't be any way to track that, if I see this correctly.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Crawford, we wouldn't have a sworn statement by the contributor. That's true. However, the requirement in law remains the same, and a candidate is ultimately responsible for the legality of her contributions, as is the candidate's treasurer.
Also, if we do away with the 15-5, there won't be a place to go on your reporting, on the online reporting, where we can see where contributors have contributed to numerous campaigns. We would have to go through all the individual campaigns to see where one contributor was contributing to maybe 20 or 30 campaigns.
Well, I do believe that our database is undergoing some changes, and that searches by the name of contributors will be accessible.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Stevens and then Wilson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that the common sense is sort of flowing out of the window here with this requiring the contributors to file this form, when in fact the candidates supply that information. Just an example, in my campaign, when say a relative or a neighbor who is not particularly involved in politics contributed $500 to my campaign, I had to make sure that they in fact filed that form. So not only did I report it on my own forms, APOC, that they had given me $500, I also had to make sure that to protect them, that they wouldn't be fined $50 a day or whatever it was, that I had filled that form out, sent it to them or taken it to them, and made sure that they signed it and sent it in. So it was an unnecessary duplication, it seems to me. Now, from what Representative next to me is saying, I mean, I wouldn't mind if you wanted to say anybody who contributed $5,000, multiple contributions or something like that, that reached a certain level, then maybe that'd be okay. You'd be able to know that information. But I guess my question of the Representative APOC, the employee of APOC, is it true that any information that that I make sure the contributor fills in on that form, make sure they send in, any information that is on that 15-5 from the contributor is also provided by myself as the candidate when I report contributions I've received? So my question is it truly a duplication, and is it necessary?
Through the chair, Representative Stevens, it is a duplication of identical information. It was intended to be filed in its original form by separate entities, one hand filed by the candidate or group receiving the contribution, the other hand being filed directly by the contributor. In that incarnation early on, it was a useful audit tool to the commission. And also, in some cases, provided information that was not otherwise available because it was before 30 days before primary reports or year-end. It was in a period when other campaign disclosure reports weren't filed. Once that requirement was changed that, in fact, a candidate can file them on behalf of her contributors, it does seem to make a lot less sense, because now they're filing a 15-5 report at the same time they're filing their campaign disclosure report, all the same information filed by the same people.
Well, thank you. If I can, Mr. Chairman, just to reiterate that it seems to be a burden to the candidate, though most people don't care too much about what burdens there are on the candidates, but it seems to be unnecessary, And the even more important issue to me is that the contributors often are political, maybe not really involved in a lot of politics. They're just local people who see a neighbor running and want to give them some money for their campaign, a family member. They're not sophisticated in terms of all of these reports and may not even know that report is due. So I think it's just making it extremely difficult for the for just a normal Alaskan citizen that wants to help out in a campaign, requiring them to make a report they don't know about. So I think it's a good idea to at least take this the $500 level reporting by the contributor out.
And then Representative Wilson, I'll get back to you, Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just what is the civil penalty? What is it, and how does that go into effect?
Maybe Brooke Miles would like to answer that.
The civil penalty provided by law is $50 per day for each day that a report is late. That is administered by the commission, although, as I said, we haven't done it. We've done lots of other civil penalties on reports due under the law, being law, financial disclosure laws, or campaign disclosure. When a report is received late, the commission staff sends to the filer a notice of civil penalty assessment explaining how the assessment was calculated and the amount of the assessment, and providing that they have 30 days to pay the assessment or to file an appeal to be heard before the commission to reduce the civil penalty based on mitigating factors.
Representative Wilson.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brooke, so you haven't been doing it up till now, and so now if there's not a change, you're going to start doing that. That sounds to me like that's going to be a lot more paperwork and time for you guys.
Well, staff wasn't that enthusiastic when the commission directed us to do that.
I don't blame them.
I have to disclose a little bit here. I think I've contributed to the penalty box twice now.
You're not alone.
Yeah.
No, I think.
Yeah, Representative James. Yeah, you're
no,
welcome.
No, I was on the point that Crawford was talking about. It's gone now.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be very happy to do away with 15-5 altogether if in fact you do make it available under a search on the internet, so that we can look under one contributor and find out all of their contributions in one search, rather than having to go through each and every candidate's APOC forms. If that's what you intend to do, then I'd be glad to do away with 15-5.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Crawford, that's certainly the intent of the commission staff, and our programmer has been working on it. It's only fair to say that a lot of that depends on funding support for the online project. So.
Representative Crawford, I think just the time and money issue. And by the way, I think I went down that road a couple years ago in trying to demand it, but I think I took the hatchet approach rather than the easy, reasonable approach. So I got shut down right away. Okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one more question. On page 5, line 21. What exactly does false factual mean? Brooks, can you tell me that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, you may note that entire Section 9 is in part of the Election Code 1556. It is not administered by the commission. It would be prosecuted by the district attorney. It is true that if the commission in the normal course of its business found evidence that would relate to campaign misconduct in the second degree, which I've never known us to do, we would refer it, but the commission has no authority over this section of law.
Okay. I assume that that means somebody is making a statement as if it was fact when it indeed was false. I assume that's what that means.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, that is also what I have always in the past considered, and when I've had the commission staff has received inquiries regarding advertisements, for example, that weren't correct, and were about a candidate, we've referred those filers to this section of law and to the Department of Law to follow up on their inquiry. You may note that it has this, it's false information, but it's only about a candidate. So if there was false information about ballot issues, that's not included here, and it's not in the campaign disclosure law anywhere either. The campaign disclosure law only requires that advertisements and communications be identified and disclosed, but not that they be factually correct.
Fix that, I would think.
That's another day and another discussion.
I would think so.
Yes, and let me take a brief of these just for a second to ask something to the committee. Just trying to do a little housekeeping here to see how we're going to do the meeting before we have to get out of here at 9. So just in case the election bill takes a little longer than anticipated, I'm going to skip over it for a second, hold it over for the bottom of the calendar. We'll go to House Bill 371, which we have heard, and it's the act establishing the Alaska Veterans Memorial Endowment Fund, and we have to establish the new CS before we come in here, and let me explain the new CS. The CS took the Senate's version, and it's draft C. Do you have it, Representative James?
I'm looking.
Okay, and what this did was change the endowment tax credit. And I think it gave it to 75%, if I'm correct, the value for tax creditability. And Representative James and I discussed this, still has some problems with it. I really would like to move this bill along. It goes to the Finance Committee. I'd like for them to have it on their table today, if possible. So with that, I think Representative James has an amendment.
Well, first of all, we need to put 50 C before us.
Yes.
I would move that work draft C for House Bill 370, House Bill 371 be our working document.
Any objections? We have it.
And then I would move amendment number one.
And I'll object just so you can discuss it.
Okay. And actually what amendment number one is totally takes out the tax credit issue altogether. I make a commitment again, as I did before. I'll do everything in my power to raise money to put into this fund because I think there's probably lots of potential for money to go in there, but I'm just not willing to do the tax credit at this time. So that's the issue.
Discussion on the amendment?
No, but I think it's germane to the amendment. Will this then basically change the title?
Yes.
It would.
The title, the amendment, the first part of it, they're lining on the amendment on line three is
out of the
takes it out of the title.
I thought I put a copy in everybody's packet.
Actually, it's an act establishing Alaska's Veteran Memorial Endowment Fund and providing for an effective date.
Okay, follow up.
Yeah, Representative Stevens, he's got it. Representative Stevens.
I have it. The kind of the other body, did I hear you right, Mr. Chairman, that they actually increased the tax credit from 50, which we first heard?
Decreased it.
Right, they decreased it. 25% is the amount of decrease. Got a tax credit in the title.
Well, no, this amendment would take it out of the title.
That's what I'm saying, but they increased it, it looks like.
No, they decreased it. I'd have to go back to the other bill, but we do Carroll here who can actually tell us what the actual reduction was. Ms. Carroll.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Carol Carroll, and I'm with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. The tax credit had two kind of sections to it. The first $100,000, you were allowed 50% of that. And the second $100,000 in the original bill, you had 100% of that as a tax credit. What the Senate did was reduce the second $100,000 down to 75%.
25% less.
Right.
You put it up and add in the $200,000. Has to be, it's not over $200,000, so it is the,
James.
The next, it's just language is different, that's all.
So Representative Fate, on the 50%, it stayed the same, and on the, on the 100,000, it stayed at 50, and over 100, it went from 75 to 50.
It went from 100 to 75.
And the amendment that Representative James has would take that,
out
and change the title accordingly, true?
Right.
Okay, further discussion on the amendment, which would be amendment number one offered by Representative James. Any objection to the amendment? So moved. We've discussed the bill. It's now been amended.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative James?
Well, I would move the CF for House Bill number 371 out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, whatever there is.
Any objections? No objections, then. House Bill 371 moving from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. All right, that brings us back then. Why don't we start? Yeah. All right. Mr. Crawford, what I have here is some amendments, and it looks like quite a few of them. If you'll explain to us, that brings us back to the bill, 531.
Since these aren't numbered there, I have to figure out which is which myself.
Representative Crawford, 531, where are we on this? Do you have an amendment?
The first one, I think it's just a technical amendment. Let's see, page 2, line 17. They're not numbered, so it's offered as amendment number one.
We call this amendment number one.
Page 2, line 17 is starts. In the rest of this, we have changed advertising to communications. On page 2, line 17, we continue to call it advertising. I would think that we should keep it to communications.
All right, so on page 2, line 17, Brooke, is there any objection to that from your point of view?
Mr. Chairman, there's not. One of my staff members identified that inconsistency earlier today.
All right. Representative Stevens? Is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, we'll take the amendment. Amendment number one being passed. All right, Mr. Crawford.
I have a question for. Also, there's another technical amendment on page 4, line 17, following candidate. Um, after candidates add the words "or proposition," because I think that that had been the thrust of this was to include propositions as well.
Would that be included in the non-group entity?
I'm not sure about non-group entity because that's something I'd like to have
all right.
further clarification from
the... Did you make sure that these amendments were given to Brooke Miles?
I believe they have been.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Brooke, do you are you savvy to the amendment?
I haven't seen them, although I am following
okay.
along.
Okay, it says insert or proposition that is in as the term is defined in AS 1530065 sub C.
That works.
So the non-group entity, we're not being redundant?
No.
Okay. That we're going to call this amendment number two, and it's been moved, and I objected for discussion. Further discussion, Representative Fate and then Wilson.
Yeah, I'm still not clear as to what that does to the intent when you place proposition after candidate. Can you explain to me how, if that changes... are you speaking specifically to the candidate here, or are you speaking to other forms, for example, for a referendum type or an initiative, which is a proposition? Is this the intent, then, is to cover all kinds of elections, not just elections of candidates, but elections of initiatives?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Miles.
All current law requires all political communications, either with respect to candidates or ballot propositions, to be reported. And with the change in language from advertisement to communication, the specification of ballot propositions being included was left off. So the amendment number two is proposed would make sure that communications intended to influence the outcome of a ballot question are included and subject to the law.
Okay, so then it would be in order to insert that proposition.
We would appreciate that being inserted.
Okay, that's fine.
We have Mr. Bailash here as well, who's been following this. Representative Bailash.
Faith, I think we may see an amendment similar to this on the Senate floor. We just hadn't decided whether to try and take care of these couple of little issues on the Senate floor so that we could avoid a concurrence vote, but that is an issue, and thank you, Representative Crawford, for bringing it up, because the way the definition reads, as long as the issue doesn't identify a candidate, then it's not an expenditure, and there is room to argue, although this just makes it clear.
Anytime we can be emphatic in the statutes, we should be, right? The objection has been removed. Is there any other objection? Hearing none, then we'll take amendment number two. Representative Crawford.
Chairman, my next one is goes along with this same line here, but I'm not really sure about non-group entity, and if you could explain to me, I see in House Bill 177, which we passed earlier, non-group entity was included there, and here we're excluding non-group entity, if I understand correctly, and I was wondering why we would be inconsistent in that. If you could
through the chair, Representative Crawford, if you could refer me to where we're excluding them. I think what you may be referring to is that some of these statutes appear as if non-group entities are not included in the way the statutes here read. And the reason is because when legal services prepares for the upcoming session, they deal with the statutes as they read on the first day of session. And because House Bill 177 was vetoed by the governor and then overridden by the legislature after the session had begun, all of the files and databases and whatnot that they're working from don't include those changes from 177. And so for legal services, rather than try to keep up on the statutes in real time, they simply throw down a line of demarcation and kind of work from there through the course of the session. There are statutes in place for the reviser to deal with these issues. In no way are non-groups expected or anticipated to be excluded from any of these requirements.
Well, the way it's worded here, it says excluding those placed by an individual or non-group entity. I mean, that's on page 4, line 16. And I would think that we should delete or non-group entity, unless there's a good reason not to.
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, the reason non-group entities are excluded in that particular case is due to a court decision, United States Supreme Court decision in 1995, McIntyre was the name of it, and that involved a situation in Ohio where there was a school bond proposition out, and a little old grandmother wanted to do her part to support the efforts of the school district to get the bonding measure passed. And so she went out and wrote up a flyer herself, copied it, and started passing it out. Well, she didn't put a paid-for-by statement on it. And under Ohio's elections laws, she is required to do that. And so I think the ACLU helped her, and she challenged it all the way through the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that in that situation, her expression, her speech, did not in any way pose a threat of corruption or the appearance of corruption. She wasn't dealing with a public official, and the communication was very much initiated by her and was also limited in the, you know, it wasn't a $50,000 ad campaign. And so the court has said that for those expenditures that are minor in dollar value and initiated by an individual, they don't have to be regulated. They can fall under the First Amendment and get some additional protections. And you'll notice that it has to be placed by a non-group entity and cost less than $500. So if it costs more than $500, and any ad placed in the Daily News or the Newsminer or the Empire or any of the other newspapers around the state or any direct mail piece, I'm sure most of you are familiar with, will cost more than $500.
In the example that you made, Mr. Chairman, could I have a follow-up?
Yes, yes.
In the example you just used, wouldn't individual cover that? I was wondering if a non-group entity was like Common Sense. Is that who we would be excluding?
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, whether or not Common Sense for Alaska fits the definition of a non-group entity is unclear at this point. You'll notice that in House Bill 177, a non-group entity was defined as it's a three-part test, cannot engage in business, its assets don't belong to any shareholders, and it's not under the influence of business or something along those lines. Whether or not Common Sense for Alaska is under the influence of business is something I'm not aware of and not able to make a decision. But if they wanted to step into the political arena during a campaign season and make expenditures, they would have to demonstrate that they are, in fact, insulated from the influence of business.
Representative Crawford?
I'm not sure about what a non-group entity really is and how we define that.
Why don't we get Brooke Miles to just talk to that issue, because they have to deal with that.
If she could tell us, you know, like District 22 Democrats, is that a non-group entity, or you know, Common Sense, or any of these other issue type groups? It seems to me that if we're going to include them here in 177, that we should include them here in 531 as well. I guess it's a policy call. I think that we have covered the little old lady in North Carolina, I believe, under excluding individuals. But non-group entities mean something else to me.
Brooke, you want to give an answer to that?
Mr. Chairman, the commission staff has also been trying to figure out exactly what a non-group entity is. I can report to you that we have none registered. In the previous cycle, you may know that we had a regulation providing for qualified nonprofit corporations to participate in elections in a manner similar to individuals, but with the giving power of a group. There was only one association that had qualified and was participating in that, and resulted in a significant amount of controversy. In the past legislative session, you all passed House Bill 177, which changed that around and described a non-group entity as a person other than an individual that takes action, the major purpose of which is to influence the outcome of an election, and that meets the same three-part test described by the court in ACLU versus the state of Alaska following campaign finance reform. That is that they cannot participate in business activities, they do not have shareholders who have a claim on corporate earnings, and that they're independent from the influence of business. Under the new guidelines provided in House Bill 177, these non-group entities could register with the commission and then at the same giving power as an individual. Commission staff seriously doubts we'll see any non-group activity because it makes more sense for these associations to form a standard political action committee that may find money and support a candidate. Like I say, because their giving level is only half of that of a political action committee, and their limitations and restrictions are the same, it really wouldn't make sense for someone to go that route. But time will tell.
Well, and by pulling them out in this particular amendment, that still doesn't change the conundrum then.
Oh.
So we would still have that issue to deal with.
Yeah.
As long as we're going to have them there under that description, we probably better leave this language in, and it'd be my guess. And then if we want to deal with it as an issue, then we should take it through the whole statutory scheme, I would think.
I would think so, too. And, Mr. Chairman, I might add that just in a point of clarification, what we're looking at here on line four, excluding those placed by an individual or non-group entity, $500 or less, and that don't directly identify a candidate or a ballot question, well, what harm is that? The commission only has authority over monies that are spent intended to influence the nomination or election of a candidate or the outcome of a ballot question. So this is not controversial.
And I would maintain my objection to that, but Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still trying to understand. This $500, is that a total contribution, or could there be many contributions of $500 to different campaigns and different issues? Because that, you know, even though it's less than the $1,000 that a group can give as a PAC, $500 in numerous campaigns could still amount to a sizable amount of money. So if you could explain it to me, I'd appreciate it.
Brooke, you want to try that?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't really understand Representative Crawford's concern here. We're talking in this section about a communication, not a contribution. We're talking about a communication, and this is excluding those, and they're all subject to the law. Okay, this is what this is talking about. These communications, they're all subject to the disclosure law. Unless they're placed by an individual or non-group entity, they cost $500 or less, and they don't talk about candidates or ballot issues.
Thank you. Mr. Balash.
I could just make one more point, Mr. Chairman. In House Bill 177, the non-group entities consistently throughout the statutes are treated in a similar fashion to individuals, and that's why they're mentioned in the same breath as an individual in this case. And I think if you review 177, you'll find that consistently throughout the statutes, they're treated in a similar fashion, and that was done deliberately.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. We're losing our committee, and some of the benefit of some of the discussion. And what we can do, Mr. Representative Crawford, is we can continue the discussion on this amendment first up next time around, or we can take a vote on it right now.
I'll withdraw it.
Withdraw it. So let's take that off the table, and then really the next major discussion is going to be over the 15-5 reporting issue, and that'll be the first up discussion then.
I'm going to withdraw the 15-5 as long as Shield do what they were saying about being able to do a search on a contributor as well as a candidate. I don't have a problem with
recognizing they have resource issues they got to deal with, especially under a tremendously high tension pressure election year. But with that, then I will entertain some movement on the bill.
I would move. We left it past that. That we move bill, House Bill. What is this number 531 with the personal recommendation and pass fiscal
as amended.
As amended.
Any objection? All right, so be it. And House Bill 531 as amended with the individual recommendations and attached. This is zero fiscal note, isn't it?
It should be two fiscal notes.
Oh, there's two fiscal notes. I'm sorry, you're right.
Yeah, two, that's right.
With no objection?